Friday, which generally means the last day of the week, Mr. Shannon.
Now that's a good, that's an interesting argument, because the last day of the week, is it Saturday or is it Sunday?
Well,
you think it's Friday.
The last day of the work week is generally Friday, yeah. Although we understand there are many people that work weekends and don't work on a Monday to Friday kind of schedule. But
I've never worked on a Monday to Friday schedule in my life.
I mean, in my mind, the week ends Sunday, like Sunday night is the end of the week. I mean.
Yeah. And yet on the calendar, Sunday's the start.
Really?
Yeah.
What calendar is that? Send me one.
The one you buy at Shoppers Drug Mart.
Oh, that'll be the explanation then, because I've never bought a calendar at Shoppers Drug Mart.
Wait. Okay, the one you get free from your insurance guy.
That's the one that goes in the garbage.
Okay.
Because I'm afraid if I hang it up somewhere, I'll get seduced into buying something I don't want. In any event,
really? Have you heard of Amazon? Well,
how about Costco?
Oh, you mean the $700 club?
Yeah. It used to be the $600 club, but John and I have raised the bar slightly. Have you been to Costco during the pandemic at all?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Sure. Oh, have you?
Yeah, sure.
I have not gone.
Yeah, I never thought I'd do something at a Costco, wait in line outside.
So, wow.
Which I have done.
Wow. You got to really want to go to Costco. Yep. And are you spending more or less than the usual $700?
Oh, no, much less. Much less. Much more responsible now, Robert.
Really, are you? Quick in, quick out?
Yeah, it's good that way.
Glad to hear, John.
Yeah.
I'm sure the audience is... I'm compelled to continue to listen to this conversation about.
Well, I tell you what, then let's talk about something else.
We mentioned it yesterday during the show because we had the information. Norman Powell was indeed traded to Portland for Rodney Hood and Gary Trent Jr. Kyle Lowry was not traded, which is a really interesting scenario. I know that many fans will be happy with that idea that Lowry gets to stay, but we should really address it and will address it with our guests on today's show. Whether the Raptors should have swallowed their pride and taken a little less than what they were hoping for in order to move Mr. Lowry. And what does this mean in terms of the future? We'll address yesterday's basketball trade deadline, what the Raptors did, two other minor deals that they made, and interestingly enough, a couple of former Raptors wound up being traded for each other. We'll talk about all that. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star, Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe will join us when the program continues after these messages. Yours truly, Bob McCown, along with the John Shannon. On the day after the trade deadline has come and gone in the National Basketball Association. And that's what we are here to discuss. With us from the Boston Globe, Bob Ryan, from the Toronto Star, Doug Smith. Greetings to both you, gentlemen. So let us begin where the majority of the audience, I believe, to this program would have the most interest, and that would be regarding the Toronto Raptors. We certainly will address whether they got fair value for Norman Powell, who is playing well, at least offensively. But the real story here was not trading Kyle Lowry. Clearly, the Raptors will say, and there's no one to deny, that they didn't get what they hoped to get for Kyle Lowry. But what kind of a position does it put them in now with respect to Lowry? Are they now, Smith, committed to re-signing Lowry for another year in Toronto?
No, I don't think at all. I think once you get into the around the draft and around free agency, the market for him probably expands. The market yesterday was, frankly, the Sixers, the Heat, and maybe the Lakers, although they had nothing to offer. Mm-hmm. So when you get around the draft time and around free agency, the chances and the market expands for the guy. Now, I don't know whether they'll do it, whether they could bring him back on a one-on-one deal, whether that makes sense, I don't know. But it's far better to have a better group of teams to deal with in the summer than limited to three yesterday.
Is that fact, though, impacted by the reality that, Mr. Ryan, that the teams that were interested are clearly playoff teams with some aspiration for a championship, And there's almost no doubt that Lowry could have helped any one of those teams, Miami, Philly, or the Lakers.
And teams ordinarily, often in those circumstances, are interested in, if they can do it, in adding on, period. Then they want to add on at the least possible harm to the existing cast. And so if they have a sufficient draft capital that they can offer as a reward, you know, as a bait, that would be the preferred way to go, rather than subtracting any important player. That's an obvious one. That much we do know. So if, I guess no one was able to come up with the formula.
So it's Doug, I'm a little confused because I don't understand. I understand the hockey salary cap. It's much simpler than the basketball salary cap. So how does trading Lowry at the draft, or is that just all about cap space at that point?
No, it's about the number of teams who might be interested in obtaining him going forward. Well, like a team like Dallas, for instance, that wasn't in play yesterday, might be in play in the summer. A team like Indiana, let's say.
But what would the Raptors get out of that?
They would probably get the same kind of thing. Some cap relief, maybe young players and draft picks. Obviously they need a young big man. They need to replenish some draft stock. The three teams that they were limited to dealing with yesterday didn't have those to offer. So instead of, and I get this oversimplification of, oh, Masai should start over and trade Kyle and get picks and go forward. But if you're going to make a bad deal, it sets you back rather than making no deal, which gives you at least an opportunity to do something in June, July, or August.
Let me concur with that assessment, Bob?
Well, I want to ask Doug a question. How realistic are the Raptors with regard to the idea of what they can actually accomplish this year with Kyle?
I think they can get into the playoffs, maybe win a round. You know, if they get a team of Lowry, Van Vliet, and an Obi Siakam, and a bunch of guys, it's probably good enough to win a first round series in the NBA.
Fine. I agree with you. I just want to know if that's a realistic approach. You know, but they won't be hanging in a second flag as long as they understand.
I think they totally understand.
I just want to make sure that there's no. Now, I certainly wouldn't think of all people, Masai would be the unrealistic person. So I'm sure he's ever the pragmatist, I would imagine. So I just wanted to make sure that people, and how about the fandom? Do they get it? Understand?
They should, but Bob, you know, fans up here have been so spoiled for so many years because this team has been really, really good for 7 years. They don't quite get that getting in the playoffs or learning how to play in playoff games is significant because they think they should play for the Eastern Conference in the Eastern Conference final every year. It doesn't happen. So there is some unrealistic expectations among the fans, but I think they're starting to see this is not an easy thing to do, and it's not a birthright every year to be in a top four in the East.
No.
But there is a process to go through.
Well, we're talking about the economics of running a basketball team, and from the concept in the context of salary cap considerations and how much you're spending, et cetera, et cetera. But the truth is there is no intangible revenue stream to be generated by making moves this year. There's no playoff money really. You're not going to have people in buildings, or you're going to have a very limited number of people in buildings. The Raptors are not going to play in the Scotiabank Arena in the playoffs, no matter what they do. How much does that factor into how you conduct yourself if you're Masai Ujiri?
Well, I think we asked him about this last night, and I've talked to people around the organization privately a lot about this. This isn't a year that they're giving up, but it's not a year that they're really laser focused on because they know it's a screwed up year. They're in Tampa. They have no home games. They've been relocated. They've been a mess for circumstances beyond their control since March 2020. Mm-hmm. And if this year is a step sideways or even a minor step back, that's okay because they're not real. It's not a real year.
Is it more real, Mr. Ryan, for the other teams in the NBA who are playing in their home arenas on occasion, sleeping in their own beds with some regularity?
Raptors and, of course, the Blue Jays are in a specific circumstance that mm-hmm. no one else has. And right. So No, they're one off. I mean, a completely different and understandable circumstance that is not like anybody else's, and everyone is in an abnormal circumstance. They're in a ultra abnormal circumstance. So that's a given. That should be well understood. And now where we are, there's an interesting dynamic brewing, which is this is year 8 for Brad Stevens. They're falling backwards. They're 2 games under 500 as we speak. There'll be 3 games under 500 by tomorrow morning because they're in Milwaukee to lose again tonight. And as I speak, on the 26th of March, and more than likely. And so they may be the most single disappointing team in the league now that the Heat, who were the first couple of months, are starting to regain their balance a little bit. The Celtics are underachieving, or are they? That's the whole question. Lots of questions being raised in Boston about the team and how far, you know, that they've gone to 3 final Eastern Conference championships since, and now that's a pipe that's not feasible this year, not with this group. So yeah,
The funny part with the Celtics is that they seem to have been less than the sum of their parts for a few years. So they were, the Kyrie Irving thing was a bust, but they were less than the sum of the parts with the Kyrie Irving era. Kemba Walker was a gamble that was never really big on. But this year, that's a very good team, you think, and they're not getting done. Is that a Brad Stevens issue or is it a personality?
Number one, everybody has injuries in there. No, they had injuries and Brown missed the month. Jaylen Brown had become missed the month. Marcus Smart missed the month with the calf issue, and he hasn't quite been the same since he's come back. Kemba Walker started off the season not playing and has not come back to that all-star level that they hoped he would. So anybody should be able to see that, okay? But meanwhile, there's questions about Brad's inability to establish a rotation, the way he's handled the second unit, for example. And now he's taking a heat because Marcus Smart had been taking and missing big shots and closing moments of games. he shouldn't let him do that. You know, like he went out there with a lasso, you know, not
exactly.
So I'm saying there's a revisionist thing going on. You know, four years ago, I could make the following statement and not most people would agree, which I was saying this 4 or 5 years ago. If you were to put all the coaches in the NBA on the open market, with the exception of Pop is sui generis. Pop is the godfather. Pop is, you know, he's untouchable. All right. They would line up, Brad Stevens, they would line up from here to Portland to get Brad Stevens.
Mm-hmm. And
replace their coach with Brad Stevens.
Well, he was loved.
People wouldn't question that. I couldn't make that statement today. You know, and yet is he regressed? It's just things have happened. You know, it just shows you there's a limit to, you know, the player's got to play, the coach's got to coach, the GM's got to GM, the owner's got to own. You know, all these things to the proper degree. I always say that's why I'm backing up. Stop me when I stop. You know, but that's why the vintage Lakers, when they had Dr. Jerry Buss, they had Jerry West. They had Riley, and then they had Kareem and Magic and other.
Sure.
They were the perfect organization. The owner owned, and the GM was allowed to GM, and the coach was allowed to coach, and the players played, and the thing worked beautifully, and no one got in any other way, and no one tried to usurp any authorities that didn't belong to them. It was a dream circumstance. You know how rare that is, Doug? You know how rare that is.
It doesn't exist anywhere. I can't see it existing anywhere in the NBA today, but you're right.
I'm just pointing out things. Is Brad Stevens? He's in a circumstance of stuff with player personalities and injuries and moves and I think he and Danny still are on each other's page. I think, but yeah. I would like to think that we've been screaming for media and people for at least 2 years. Danny, you got to get a scorer off the bench. You don't have one. You don't have a guy that reliably helps that second unit. Well, they tried to address that yesterday. They got a guy. They brought a guy in. People don't know who he is, Monsieur Evan Fournier. He's averaging 19 points a game, and nobody knows it.
Yeah, he's gonna make a lot of 3-point shots off that bench, because he's gonna get them all because the rest of the guys aren't gonna get them, and he's gonna make them. Yeah, that was a very understated pickup. I think losing Tice was a bit of an issue.
By the way, I
kind of liked him.
Let the record show that for the first time since the Celtics came into being in 1946, yesterday they traded a German for a Frenchman.
Somewhere people are rolling in their graves.
Hey, hold on. Hey, Doug, Bob's comment about how, you know, we don't see the, you know, the owner's own and the manager's manager and the coach's coach anymore. That that doesn't happen in Toronto. You see interference from atop? No. Masai's as close as being an independent arbitrator of what goes on in the basketball world than anybody, right?
Yeah, but I don't think to the extent that Jerry Buss and whoever was the general manager, because it was
Jerry West, right?
Yeah,
probably a lot. I mean, they were very separate. I think Masai has got, he doesn't have his fingers in Nick's business, but I think he's got his fingerprints on it.
Okay,
to a bigger extent than that great Laker organization would have had. But yeah, like ownership, Larry Tannenbaum and Bell and Rogers let Masai do his thing.
Sure. Yeah, that was kind of my point. That was my point.
Masai, and by the way, let Nick do his thing, but not, you know, he's in charge.
Yeah, I know. You're right.
And just to show you how hard it is to sustain, by the way, it eventually did fizzle a little bit. Riley and West, they finally did have a,
right.
Riley wound up going to New York. It wasn't forever, but while it lasted, it was the model of what you would want.
Well, and it lasted a fair piece. It lasted almost through the entire decade with, you know, with Magic and yep. Kareem and Worthy, who should not be understated. Who was a great player, and they had support pieces as well.
So Michael Cooper, who's nominated for the Hall of Fame this year. And just being nominated is a tremendous honor.
Well, and by the way, they had a guy named Pat Riley coming off the bench that learned a lot from everybody there.
Well, that was a great team. But Bob, we're on this doing this today, and I got to ask you about two guys, Elgin Baylor and Stan Albeck.
Okay,
Stan last night, who worked here, who was one of the nicest men ever. Just a great guy.
I'll start with Stan because people don't. He will not get his proper due. It's exactly what I was thinking when I picked up my paper this morning, and I do read a newspaper, many of them every day, by the way, with the hold in my hands, the whole thing, you know. Stan Albeck was a nice man, a media. He treated us with respect, and I can still remember. You'll like this, Doug, if you appreciate Stan. I remember it was a Final Four in Indianapolis. I was in the Sunday afternoon day in between. There's an all-star game, and I went to it, and I came out of it, and Stan Albeck came running up to me. He was in town, and he said, Bob, did you see what Larry did today? Larry just dropped 49 on the Blazers. It was a vintage Larry. It was so enthusiastic, just as a basketball guy. He was a basketball fan, you know, and I'll never forget that. I've been standing outside in Indianapolis on that beautiful Sunday, and Stan Albeck just gushing about, oh, I wish you had seen Larry. You should have seen Larry today. Anyway, the man had a wonderful career. He was a gentleman, and he was a good basketball man. I hope that enough people, you know, he gets the proper send off that he deserves. Elgin Baylor, I'm regional president of the Elgin Baylor fan club. It is my belief, and I have said and written this 100 times, most recently this week when he died, Elgin Baylor is the single most influential basketball player on how the game of offense, individual offense, has played in the last 60 years. There's basketball before BE and AE, before Elgin and after Elgin. Elgin Baylor was the man who took a game, which I would say was basically horizontal and a little bit vertical, and made it very vertical and diagonal. He came up with up and unders. He came up with stutter step. He came up with changing a shot, launch angles. He came up with shifting hands in midair. No one had ever seen anyone do that. He completely invented all the staples of modern individual offense. Up until you get to the three-point shot, that's Steph Curry's thing. But anyway, Elgin Baylor transformed basketball and by himself. And that's to me. And then you start looking at and then you look at all the numbers. And one other thing I'll just throw out is that he had the most unusual season in the history of American
football,
1961-62. He got drafted. Uncle Sam said, we want you to countless American, including athletes. And Elgin Baylor spent the 61-62 season as a reservist working out of Fort Lewis, Washington, with weekend passes And then finally an 18-day leave during the playoffs. He played 48 out of 82 games that year. He averaged, are you ready? Playing with no practice, 38 points a game.
Yike.
It's unbelievable. There is probably nobody, there are a few people in basketball whose opinions I respect more than Wayne Embry's, who turns 84 years old today, by the way.
Happy birthday.
He's a great man. Wayne has told me for as long as I've known him, 25 years, that Elgin Baylor is on his list of greatest players ever and should be very high on that list. And if you're getting that kind of endorsement from that kind of guy, people need to listen to it.
Well, can I just throw something out? The fact that we have changed the topic from trade deadline to all of this stuff, does this reflect how silly trade deadline was yesterday? Because we all four of us have levels of ADD, but we did not want to talk about trade deadline very long.
There was a lot of shuffling of deck chairs yesterday, and we will find out in 6 weeks whether they worked or whether they went off the cliff.
But that's trade deadline in every sport, every year.
But the level of, I mean, without Lowry being traded, there was no big fish being traded. I mean, Aaron Gordon is a good player. McGee's a good player. They're going to make Denver better. But were they the best players traded? J.J. Redick? I don't know. I mean,
the best player traded based on his current stature in the league and value and proven as a proven commodity is Nikola Vucevic, who now plays for the Chicago Bulls. This is a man who in the last three seasons is averaged 21 points, 11 rebounds a game. He's averaging 24 points a game this year. He's a very skilled big man at age 30 who have a few years left at least. And now the Bulls have somebody to help Zach LaVine, who's having a tremendous year of scoring upwards of 30 points a game, but in the absence of any help at all, should help them. He's important. And then, you know, there's a couple other names. Victor Oladipo, he was the most favorite name. He goes to Miami. Now he's going to be playing with Jimmy Butler. Miami's already playing better. They're going to get themselves back in the mix, you know, more than they were. That's important. And one other curiously interesting one, as he now is playing for, and let me just you might as well get it straight, now playing for his eighth team and his seventh since the year 2015, Rajon Rondo is now. And since he left Boston in 2015, he has played for Dallas, Sacramento, Chicago, New Orleans, the Lakers, Atlanta, and now the Clippers. Playoff Rondo, they hope, is who they're going to acquire. So that's an interesting one, too.
He's a real thing. The interesting thing about for people in Toronto, is the Vucevic going to Chicago make the Bulls, who are one game ahead of Toronto in the playoff race, far better.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about the Raptors and the postseason, having Vucevic and LaVine ahead of you is far more imposing than it was 48 hours ago.
And should the Toronto Raptors have been more interested in Vucevic themselves?
Well, Chicago. I tell you what, though, Chicago gave up a couple of first round picks, so
protected.
Right. Yeah, I know. That's the word of the day. That was the word of the day yesterday.
I'm not real big on these picks because, frankly, the Raptors could have traded Kyle to someplace for two first round picks to a good team, but those picks are going to be horseshit. The picks are going to be bad.
Yeah.
You
alluded earlier to Norman Powell. I think that's a nice addition for Portland. You know, they got that great backcourt who last night, you know, as we speak, had their routine 62 points last night.
Yeah. You were great.
They dropped 60 on you. You expect them to drop 50, right, on you every night. Well, anyway, you know, McCollum and Lillard. I like that move for them. They're a team I call they're a dangerous team. They were a dangerous team in the bubble last year. And you know, they're going to be – you know, you don't want to look forward to goody-goody. We're playing two Blazers in the playoffs if you're a Western team. I think they've improved themselves with Norman Powell.
They're going to get Nurkic back tonight.
Yeah.
Cantor is an effective player.
Wow. Yeah. So
they're okay.
Yeah.
Look, I know Norman Powell has deficiencies in his game, but and guys who can score 20 points in a night are not uncommon in the NBA. Guys who score 20 plus points a night for 20 consecutive games or 22 or whatever it was with Norman Powell, they're not that common.
But there's only one number that counts, Bob. 44%. 44%.
Well, the number that counts is 11 million looking to make 20 million, and the Raptors weren't going to pay that.
And frankly, I think they got Norman Powell White and Gary Trent Jr. I think they got Norm Powell 2 years ago and Gary Trent, who's
with better cost control. With better cost control.
His qualifying offer this summer.
Oh, no, I think they did well on that deal.
Yeah, I think. And the intro, Gary Trent now becomes, we have our first ever father and son Raptor team.
Oh,
Gary Trent Sr. Gary Trent Sr. played 13 games in the year that the Raptors went 16-66.
97, I think.
He came to Toronto in the Damon Sotomayor trade, along with Alvin Williams.
Wow.
And he played, I think, half or a dozen games here, and that was kids playing. So there you go.
There's a father-son duo I would have rather had.
Dell and Steph, yeah.
Dell and Steph.
Dell and Steph would have. Heck, Dell and Seth would have worked good.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, by the way, Bob, I know we've got to go
to take a break.
I know, but let me just, we've reminisced a little bit, and we mentioned Larry a little bit. 42 years ago today, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Indiana State, Michigan State, NCAA, the basketball game that changed the NBA.
How is that possible that it's 42 years ago?
42 years ago.
How is that
even possible? I was there. I was sitting right, literally sitting. If Judd Heathcote wanted to look for any advice, he could have turned his shoulder and looked. And, hey, Bob, what do you think? I was sitting right
there. French Lick. This is the only time I've ever heard of French Lick, Indiana. So
yep, it's a fine little spot. I've been there a few times.
We got to take the break. We'll come back with some basketball chat here on this Friday. Back after this. We're with Doug Smith of the Toronto Star, Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, yours truly, Bob McCowan, John Shannon around this Friday roundtable. One of the curiosities, and that's all it is, you know, we were talking about guys who've been traded a whole bunch. How many times has Redick been traded, by the way? How many teams has he played for?
You know, bunch. But there's a lot. But the guy you should have mentioned is now on his eighth team, and that's the best player ever to come out of Ubi Pui, George Hill.
George Hill, right?
George Hill is now a 76er, and his perambulations are as follows. San Antonio, Indiana, Utah, Sacramento, Cleveland, Milwaukee, OKC, and now Philadelphia. He's like the Kelly girl of backup point guards. You know? Now, that's a reference you don't get too often anymore.
I was going to say, there's half of our audience is going to now have to Google and Kelly girl.
They
went out of business some time ago, but that's my frame of reference for, you know, who we help.
Well-traveled
guy who's got a similar kind of resume. I don't remember how many. It's probably not eight teams, but Corey Joseph has moved more than a few times, Smitty.
San Antonio, Toronto. Wherever he went from Toronto, Sacramento, now Detroit.
Wasn't he in Indy for a bit?
I think there's
Indy for a while. Yeah. Indianapolis when he went from here. But there's a guy, they traded Corey Joseph for DeLon Wright. It's like old Raptor point guards were on the move.
Former Raptors being traded for each other.
And Corey gets to play for Dwayne Casey again. So that's good for Corey. He's a good guy. And really good for DeLon because I think he's a really, really good basketball player. And I know Sacramento is a bit of a cesspool, but I hope we can make it out there.
Can any of you guys, or perhaps either of you guys, with due respect to John, recall a scenario where a move at the trade deadline actually had championship impact?
Oh, yeah, right away.
Go ahead.
I assume it was a trade deadline. Rasheed Wallace, right?
To Detroit,
That's the one that jumps out at me. Detroit doesn't win without Rasheed Wallace. There's no doubt. That was as big as any individual one I can think of. In this century, I can give you a big one in the last one. I was front and center in the sense of for it to see it it's instant dividends. But in 1987, the Lakers traded for Michael Thompson.
Sure.
And they don't win that year without him. And he paid instant dividends. And I mean, you know, is Bill Burtke alive? Do you know, Doug?
I want to say yes, but I don't want to say that 100% sure.
All right, but Bill Burtke, guys, was a well-known assistant coach at the Lakers, and we all knew him. And anyway, the Celtics made the trade, and the Celtics were in town and on a roll. I was covering the team then. And shows up and on Sunday afternoon and no practice. And Burtke works him out before the game with a few things, you know, and to give him a little – and that game, They beat the Celtics and stopped a big Celtic winning streak. And he like he had like 10 points and 10 rebounds in like 15 minutes. And it's absolutely that was a big one. So it can happen. And most recently, it definitely happened with Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah, he did put them over the top. He gave them a toughness. They had toughness with Ben and Chauncey, but he was a player. Rasheed Wallace was one of the more underrated players
knucklehead,
yes.
He should be in the Hall of Fame. He had Hall of Fame skills. Shouldn't have been any issue, but he held himself back. We went through a year with him when he wouldn't get into shape, and you know, I don't want to go through it. But he should have been better. It's like Derek Coleman, you know. Same. Yeah. He's a higher grade Derek Coleman. Derek Coleman should have been in the Hall of Fame too, but he just couldn't be bothered. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There's the woods are littered with guys who don't take responsibility for their greatness, and it bothers me every time I see them.
Which team made itself better by greater distance, Chicago or Denver? I mean, I think it's probably easy to say Denver because they are a better team, or were a better team yesterday than before they got Aaron Gordon. But what do you think?
You know, as Doug points out, getting Nurkic back is a, you know, God knows how he was playing so well last year. That's a good one. The other one is Miami.
I could throw that in.
Oladipo with Butler, you know, and the thing about Miami, there was discussion. I was asked this question point blank, by the way, and another podcast, my own podcast, as a matter of fact, with Mike Lupiger. They said to me, all right, yesterday, says to me, okay, let me ask you this. If you're Miami, do you give up Tyler Hero to get Kyle Lowry? And I said, well, that's very interesting. And I said, no, I can't do that. And I mean, I might give up Robinson, but I'm not giving up Hero, but I don't want to do either one. Well, they managed to, they didn't have to give up either one of those guys. They just added on, is what Miami did with a guy who, if he comes back, now he hasn't been playing that great, but if he comes back to that level, so they're going to be in that discussion. But clearly Denver, you would think it'll be very formidable with the new lineup they can put out there.
Yeah, I love what Denver did, because you can run Aaron Gordon off screens and let Jokic or Murray throw him lobs. Mm-hmm. He can make a three-pointer. Michael Porter Jr. is going to have a lot more opportunity and a lot more space now with Aaron Gordon on the court with him.
Jokic is.
I can watch Jokic play every day for the rest of my life and be a happy man.
He makes everybody, you know, I hate that phrase, makes everybody better. I like to say he enables everyone to do what he does best.
It's like a more fun Arvydas Sabonis.
Well, I'll tell you what, you said a key word there for me, Doug, I've never seen a guy, maybe since Magic Johnson, but I know there's lots. You guys are a lot closer than I am. But he really loves playing the game, and you can see it. That's the thing I like about him. I mean, hence the name the Joker, right? I mean, in many ways, other than play on his name. But I just love the way how much fun he appears to be having.
He's just so smart and so creative, and he's so normal. Like he looks like us. He's a sort of puffy, middle-aged guy running slow, never jumping, and makes unbelievable basketball plays.
It's not a beach body, that's for sure. I mean, it works.
It works. He's just fun to watch. I just like watching him play basketball because he's going to do something crazy.
Well, Ryan mentioned Hero earlier. We keep bouncing all over the place, but he was allegedly the piece that the Raptors wanted in the Lowry deal. Do we believe that to be true?
Well, I know they liked him a lot more than they like Robinson, yeah. And I think if the Heat had put Hero in a conversation, there's a good chance that Lowry would be a Miami Heat today. But like Bob said, if you're Miami, you want to augment what you got. You don't want to you make yourself different with Lowry and not Hero. You make yourself better if you have Lowry and Hero.
But again, I mean, all that is a fact. These are all factors. And I assume if Miami had made the deal for Lowry, they would have attempted to sign him to an extension. But in essence, they're renting Lowry for what they hope is a run at a championship. And in order to do that, they would have had to give up a potentially significant portion of their future in Hero, right? Who is a young player, still like very talented. You want to have him around for a while, but are you going to sell the future for the present?
and very inexpensive. And I do think the one part of a Lowry trade that maybe didn't get as much notice as it should have is that if he was going to go to Philly, the Lakers, or the Heat, they would have his bird rights and could re-sign him for another two-year contract that he's going to get. And there would have had it been some kind of agreement in place kind of thing before the trade was made with Lowry's blessing. But okay, we're going to trade you to Miami and they're going to give you two more years. And I think that was an issue in the talks with any team, because renting is one thing, but if you get him and you get his bird rights, you can get him for 2 years, $50 million going forward, that you don't have to spend in free agency because you're capped out.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of, that's why the Powell deal is so good for Portland. They have no money to spend, but now they can sign Norm Powell for $20 million and not worry about it because they don't have to have the cap space to get him.
Right.
That's why that aspect of the Powell to, like, they can do a 4-year, $85 million deal with him this summer that they could never have done if they didn't trade for him. They couldn't do it on the market. So, that's a big part of any transaction these days.
So the Lakers, the Clippers probably felt like they didn't need to do anything, wanted to do something, but didn't need to do anything. Kind of the hidden gem in this whole year, the Phoenix Suns, who won 8 in a row at the end of last year and still didn't make it into the postseason, and have been a very good basketball team. But probably had some needs. Do you think they felt like it's too soon for them to make a run?
You know, I hadn't thought about it, the Suns, this moment you bring them up, and you're right, they didn't enter into this. They weren't one of the 23 teams with the 44 players that were involved, just right. I know of. I don't know if it's a matter of, I have no idea. I just can't speak to it. It's very interesting you point that out. When I think about him this year, because I've been a member of the Booker fan club since he was at Kentucky, believe me. In fact, I maintain to this day that if John Calipari had played him more minutes than he deserved when he was platooning that year, they would have won that championship game and he would have had another ring. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Chris Paul, I get continually surprised. First of all, you can't, it's hard to take him seriously. You see him on commercials so much, you just forget that he's actually a player. You know, but he has an effect on teams.
No kidding.
And although he's never, won a championship, but boy, the older he gets, he seems to have more disproportionate effect on the team. He's had a tremendous effect on this Phoenix team.
Yeah, he's really freed up Booker for sure to be the shooter and the guy, the off the ball guy who worries. He's an all-star.
Yeah.
And I think Chris Paul getting over 10,000 assists this week might have been one of the more underrated, underreported stories in the 10,000 assists.
Yeah, well, you're right. I didn't know. I got to tell you, there are times in your career, all those long basketball, professionally over 50 years, and I've gone to a lot of NCAA tournaments, 32 to be exact, and you missed the boat. I blew it on him. I covered his regional. He showed me anything. I couldn't believe people were making a big fuss out of this guy. I didn't see it. And so, boy, I was as wrong, disproportionately wrong as I've ever been about a guy I had a chance to see, not just once, but more than once, so.
Yeah. Bob, you brought up the Los Angeles teams, and Bob mentioned this earlier. I think Rondo to the Clippers is a big move because there is some legitimacy to his playoff experience and his ability to get an offense organized that they don't have in the Clippers. And now they got it. And I think that's a really big pickup for Kawhi Leonard and Paul George to have that kind of guy in a playoff series to help them along.
Oh, I definitely think so. Assuming he hasn't lost, I don't know. I'm not sure how he was here in Atlanta, but him, he's always, there's always an issue. There's always something going on. I don't know. But you're right. And what do you get for the Lakers? They don't win without him last year. They don't win without the contribution of playoff Rondo. And they liked him. And apparently he had a good influence on younger players. He was on LeBron hugging him. He fit in great. They weren't able to keep him. Or they didn't. I don't know why he didn't stay at all, but he went on. Anyway, you're right. And they did need that, because what do they have? They have Patrick Beverley. Patrick Beverley is a pest. He's a very good professional pest. But there's a limit to what he actually accomplishes in the big picture, mm-hmm. Rondo has proven at the highest level with the biggest stakes, what he can do in these matters. So, yeah, I think it could be a potentially interesting move.
Well, the Lakers
put him ahead of the Lakers. It might in the LA thing. It might have moved him ahead of the Lakers.
Well, but if the Lakers have got to get healthy first, that's the biggest key for them. But
yeah, the Clippers got to stay healthy.
Well, but the other team that we haven't mentioned at all, which is kind of amazing, is what the Nets didn't do, and did they need to do anything? And how good are the Nets? Are the Nets prohibitive to come out of the East?
They got to get healthy.
They got to get Durant's got to play.
Hope. Yeah. And I'm not being facetious, and I'll try to pick my words carefully, and hope that when the big games come, that Kyrie is in the right mood. That the stars and the planets are in the proper alignment for Kyrie to
bring
his vast resources of basketball skill and knowledge to the fore, and not, you know, there's always something, you know, there's always something, and he can play. Oh my God, you know, I mean, he just got to, he dropped 40 the other day after not being, can you rely on?
No, and the answer is no. All evidence points to that.
But they have another star, so you don't have to rely on him all the time. I mean,
it's one thing to say rely on him, but it's another thing to say don't let him adversely affect their group. As he did in Boston. I don't know that. I think Brooklyn might be more mentally tough to withstand the divisiveness of Kyrie than Boston was. So it might be less of a factor, but he can ruin your team in an awful hurry.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that he intimidated the kids, and Brown figured it out before Tatum did, and figured out what to do about it. It was too late. You know, look, I've said this 1,000 times. I think the guy is intelligent, but he's searching for something and he's not sure what it is yet. You know, he's never definitively said why he left Cleveland. Now we assume he wanted his own show, get away from Big Brother. And then, you know, but he's never specifically said that I know of, not publicly. And he has talent. He's an enigma, there's no doubt. But back to John, your whole point, Brooklyn, they're assuming that Durant will be physically healthy. I'm not saying they'll be co-favorites. Well, could be tri-favorites. If Embiid comes back healthy, Philly was playing great, and now they buttressed themselves a little. And of course, the Bucks, who are now right now playing very well. I think they're about to win their 8th in a row against the Celtics on the night of the 26th of March, as far as I can. and you know, that's that. There's going to be three going there. So definitely.
Looks like it. Guys, time is our enemy here. We could chat all day.
42 years ago, Bob, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird.
And also 48 years ago, Bill Walton's 21 for 22, I believe, was this date as well, which I missed because I had an Army Reserve meeting. And so, that's how I always know.
What the date is? That's pretty good. The year is. Yeah.
Army Reserve meeting. That's why I couldn't see Walton play. But Larry and Magic, I'll tell you guys, those were the longest between Saturday afternoon and Monday night. With the longest 2 days I ever remember spending, the anticipation of that game was so. I've been to 32 NCAAs, I said, and I've never been in a circumstance like that. It was unprecedented, has never been matched. That the anticipation of that thing, we all couldn't wait. You know, we would have liked to have played that game Saturday night at midnight because we could. Sunday dragged, Monday dragged, blow it up, let's go. I've never experienced anything like it.
We got to get out of here. Mr. Smith, Mr. Ryan, it's always our pleasure. You're so kind of to join us, and we will hopefully have a chance to chat with you down the road soon.
Good to see you again.
Thanks, great to see you guys.
The break, and we'll wrap in a minute. Back after this. Again, our thanks to two of the best, two of our favorites, Doug Smith and Bob Ryan, for joining us. We spent a lot of time just sitting listening to them talk, and I like that. Get paid the same whether we talk or not.
What? Get paid?
No, we don't. I didn't say that, John. What I said is we get paid the same.
Okay.
Which is still a truism. Very quickly, I don't know if we mentioned this or didn't mention this, but the Raptors also made a couple of other moves. Matt Thomas goes to Utah for a second round pick. Terrence Davis goes to Sacramento for a second round pick.
You just have to think those are precautionary moves just in case they were able to trade Lowry at the appropriate time.
Explain.
Well, if you were having to get, if you were getting bodies back, you had to, to have roster spots for them, right?
Yeah, I think there was some of that, but I don't think that was much of it. I mean, both guys had moments where they performed well, but weren't part of the plans long term.
And I'll tell you what, once Terrence David had his issues in New York City, I think his days were numbered here.
I think you're probably right. Mr. Shannon, have yourself a swell weekend. We hope the audience does the same. We'll catch you back here on Monday if the crick don't rise. For Shannon McCowan, goodbye, everybody.